Before we start this week's episode, we'd like to remind you folks that the Air Raid podcast is available at many places, including the Stitcher Radio app for your mobile device, iTunes, our website air-raid.net, and of course at www.cairoradio.com. Well, hello and welcome, everyone. Welcome to the Air Raid Podcast. This is episode 259 in what is now officially considered a long and drawn-out series. I am your host, Aaron Roden, and this, of course, is the show where we drop bombs of awesome straight into your ear holes. Almost missed it. Almost missed it right there, man. Right there. Oh, yeah. We've got a great show planned for you this week. Going up a little late because I thought that today was actually Sunday, and it's not. It's actually Monday. I'm still on vacation and reeling from the weekend's events. I was one of the lucky MCs at this weekend's Timberfest there in Carnation, Washington, and just had a wonderful time. Wonderful time, and we'll get into that in a moment. We're going to be talking with Danny of the band Grave Babies this week, who have an album coming out on July 24th. This week, man. 4 days. 4 days. It's coming out. And it is super-duper fantastic. And I hope you guys really enjoy it. Actually, I know that you guys are going to really enjoy it because we have an absolutely wonderful, wonderful conversation with Danny of the band Grave Babies for you. Perfectly Dark, their album, Holographic Violence, like I said, comes out July 24th, later this week. And you can find out more by going to the Hardly Art website, which is hardlyart.com/Grave Babies. And that'll take you right there. They've also got a couple of shows coming up, and let's see if we can find those here. Oh, release day on July 24th, Seattle, Washington, Everyday Music. They're playing a free all-ages in-store show at 6 p.m., and then also that same day, they're playing the Capitol Hill Block Party, man. Yeah, with TV on the Radio, Built to Spill, Proto Martyr, Chastity Belt, Shannon and the Clams, and more. There in Capitol Hill, here in Seattle. Okay? So go and check them out there, and check them out online as well. And we'll post links to their website and where to find out more about Grave Babies on our website at www.air-raid.net. Yeah. All right. Let's talk about Timber really quick, man. I had the honor and the pleasure of being the MC, or one of them, for the festival this weekend once again, and it's always a great time. Timber is very laid back. It's a very laid back festival. It's family friendly. It's awesome. The people that run the thing are just super great and very helpful, and a lot of them listen to this show, which I found out this weekend. Also, this is going to sound like a humble brag, and it's totally not supposed to be a brag. It's supposed to be just a very humble recount of what happened to me this weekend. Because I met a lot of people that listened to this here show at the festival this year, and everybody had great things to say, and it was a very, very humbling experience. Because when you do something like this, right, you do a blog, you do... You write for a living, or you do a podcast or anything like that, or a video series, whatever. You get a lot of mail that critiques what you do online, which is good. You know, it that has a place in this world, right? You want to know that that you're doing right and how to make things better. So whenever you get constructive criticism, that's always a fine thing to do to better your art or whatever it is you're doing. And so we don't get a, you know, we don't get a ton of positive feedback. We do, we get some, and that's all fine and good. And it's wonderful to hear from that. But when you meet people out in the real world that listen to what you're doing and appreciate what you're doing, it's an amazing feeling, man. And it was a very validating experience this weekend. Extremely validating for me. And it was emotional to say the least. Because I was just running into people the whole weekend that were just saying, man, I just love what you're doing. Keep up the great work. I loved such and such episode is my favorite. It was so wonderful. And I've got to thank the people, the good people at Artist Home who put this thing on. And everybody who works at Timberfest for just being so awesome. It was like, and I said this on stage when we were introing David Bazan the final night on Saturday night at the Campfire stage, which is a beautiful, beautiful place, that it feels like it's almost like a summer camp, right, that you go back to every year. And you see the people that you met the year prior, and it's just like nothing has happened in between that year span. You're just right back in it with the same people that that you were with last year, and it's like you just pick up right where you left off, right? And I had that experience with the sound with one of the sound guys, Gary Mula, who does the sound for the Campfire stage, which is just, I mean, he is just on his man. That guy is just so good at what he does. And I met up with him and Mark Baumgarten, and it was just like we just picked up right where we left off, man. And I said right when I walked up, I you know, put my hand on both their shoulders, and I was like, we're getting the band back together. And they both laughed. It was funny. It was great. It was so much fun, man. So thank you so much to The Warehouse, who basically runs the whole show there, Artist Home, who puts everything together, all the sound people, Gary Mula and his team, the sound guys at the main stage, all the artists that were there and playing, and it was just such a fantastic time. Thank you guys so much for having me out there. It was just, oh, man. And to all of you who came out to the festival, and who may be listening to the show for the first time because you heard about it there, welcome. Welcome to the show. Welcome back to the show. And if I met you and got a chance to talk with you out there, that was fantastic. Thank you so much, man. And thank you so much for the kind words. One of the things that was the supreme icing on the cake was getting to intro the Dead Milkmen onto the main stage on Saturday night. And I brought my daughter up there onto the stage to help me introduce the band. And of course, she got shy, which she did, you know. Is totally understandable in front of about 9,000 people. So, you know, that's fine, right? That's fine. But she did great, and it was super cool to bring her up on stage. And it was super great to have my children see what I actually do when I disappear for 3 days at a time and go do these things. And it was a lot of fun. I had such a great time. Oh, and one other thing, man, that was super validating was getting to talk with the Dead Milkmen. Because we had them on this show a little while back when they came through Seattle a couple months ago. And they remembered me. And they were like, man, that was such a great interview you did with Rodney. And we really appreciated it and appreciated all the kind words and stuff. And we just hung out. We just hung out in the backstage area, just drinking and smoking some cigs. I had a couple cigarettes at the festival. Not going to lie. It's probably bad. Bad for me, but you know, it was a good time. So, yeah. Okay, let's get on with it, shall we? This conversation with Danny of the band Grave Babies is just super fantastic. Their new album, Holographic Violence, comes out July 24th. Find it once again, hardlyart.com/gravebabies. You can buy it directly from there or go to your local record store on the 24th and get it there. Let's see. We're going to be featuring music from the new album that is yet to be released. 4 days to go. This song is called Eternal, On and On. And we'll be right back with more of the Air Raid Podcast for your ears. With special guest today, Danny of the band Grave Babies. Okay. Be back in a moment. Stay with us. Apologize for the sound in the background. That is my fan, which we decided that we need to have on right now because it is sweltering here in Seattle. I got to tell you, that song Eternal that we just heard makes me, like, I listened to it again on my scooter ride home today, mm-hmm. and it made me feel like such a badass, dude. That's like, good. I was like, I felt like I was in, like, the movie The Lost Boys or something like that, mm-hmm. and I put my helmet on, and I'm just racing through the streets, you know?
Yeah.
And, like, there might be vampires somewhere around.
Yeah.
You know? It just... That's exciting. I felt rad. I felt just totally rad.
That's good. That was the feeling... Yeah, I guess that was what I was... That's what I was feeling.
Really?
When I made it. I mean, it's... Yeah, it kind of just drags you through it, right? It's one of those...
It does.
One of those songs that kind of propels
you. It's very driving, and it's very dark. It feels very dark.
Yeah.
You know? Mm-hmm. And it's got some 80s influence going on in there.
The drums, it was always like there's that snare. The snare and the kick were always like supposed to be vintage sounding. They're coming from like a Yamaha keyboard.
Oh, okay.
But I've stuck with those same kicks and snares throughout the entire life of Great
So that Vegas. Is not a true to life drum set that is playing it,
not
the beats.
Whole thing. No, we do have a drummer on the new record, and Mark
Gadjadar, right?
Yeah,
yeah,
and he is playing cymbals in I don't know what he's playing on every single song. We spent like kind of a marathon few days working with him.
Yeah,
so I don't really know what he put on every song. I mean, if I listened to it, I could tell you, but I think there's some cymbals on that one and some other stuff. I did most of the drum programming, so there was a lot of
interesting. Because I was gonna—that was gonna be one of my questions. Was like, how did you get that drum sound?
It was like multi-layered drum samples, programmed, and then edited, and then brought to him, and he did some editing, and then he laid down acoustic drums over them.
Oh, that's fantastic, man! So that makes so much more sense in my mind now.
Yeah, it's just like this huge kind of. I think that was kind of. I don't know. I didn't go to school for this, so I never, you know, I've learned along the way.
Yeah, yeah.
But it's kind of like a wall of sound kind of situation where, like, everything is doubled and everything is stereo panned and everything is just as big as it can possibly be before it hits, like, compression and stuff like that.
Right.
But, because I just want it to be bigger. And that's kind
well,
of
that definitely, that comes through in the recording, my friend.
Yeah. I think that's what you're feeling.
Yeah. Here. That's what I'm feeling. That's what I was trying to say. Lost Boys.
Yeah. There's a lot of feeling. That's a very emotionally charged film.
Especially the part where there's the, you know, the guy with the chain around his neck, the bodybuilder playing the saxophone.
Oh, yeah. That's a wonderful, that's a live band. That's what a live band should be.
That's right. Do you know that that guy is actually a sax player?
He looks like a real
band.
Sax player to me.
It's actually his band in that movie.
That's cool.
Danny, how do you say your last name, dude?
Walfelt.
Danny Walfelt of the band Grave Babies sitting here in the backyard, in the sweltering backyard studio with me. Is that fan hitting you enough, dude?
Oh, yeah.
Because it feels good on this side.
I started turning on our fan at our practice space recently. Yeah. Just plugging it in, like, during songs because I can't stand it anymore.
Right.
And it's kind of funny how a little bit of fan will really get you kind of cooled off.
Goes a long way.
It really does.
Right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, it sure does, man. So, Danny, where are you from, man? I know nothing about you. Like, I did.
Well, I don't know anything about you either.
Well, everybody else knows a lot about me on this show.
That's true.
That's not what it's about. It's about you, sir. It's about you and
Well, we'll get to know each other, and I'll start. I'm from Champaign, Illinois. The Midwest.
Yeah.
And now I'm here.
What, born and raised in
I'm
Champaign,
born,
Illinois?
Born and raised in Champaign, Illinois.
Where is Champaign, Illinois?
It is the middle of Illinois, a little bit to the east.
Okay.
But pretty much right central Illinois.
Okay, so south of Chicago.
Very south of Chicago. Chicagoans, they don't really, like, recognize kind of the central part of the state. Anything south of Interstate 90 is supposedly, like, they make fun of you and they mock you. When I went to college, I met a lot of people from Chicago, and they kind of think everyone else that's not from Chicago, much like Seattle, I think. Yeah.
Yeah.
They think everyone else in the whole state is just like a bunch of hillbillies.
Right. Right. And that's it. That's totally like it is here.
I see their point, you know, but I would argue differently. But.
So what kind of town was Champaign?
It was a college town.
College town.
Midwest college town.
Okay. What college was...
The University of Illinois.
Oh, really?
Was there.
Yeah. Oh, okay.
Big college.
So you had some culture going on. You had a lot of drunk students, I'm sure.
We had, that was like, I mean, towards the end, like my childhood in the 90s, that was when, like, I saw a lot of bands. There was a lot of bands in Champaign. There was, like, a huge college scene there.
Oh, that's a good,
With, like, Hum and the Poster Children. And there was a whole bunch of bands, and I actually started playing music at that time, and so I would see these bands. My friend's mom was, like, the head of the college radio station, and we had a band that played Nirvana covers only, and so we played some bars around town, and my dad actually worked with the bass player from the Poster Children, so I kind of got to know all these, like, musicians and stuff when I was, like, younger. And then I don't think any.
What did your dad do?
He worked. He was a computer programmer at a flight simulator company.
What?
They built like.
Like the flight big simulators. flight simulators for training pilots and stuff?
Yeah, yeah. So it was that.
Oh, wow.
But I think they also like made software and stuff too.
Did you ever get to sit in one of those?
I did, yeah, yeah.
You got to do one of those things?
Yeah. Well, I didn't do the thing, I don't think.
They didn't let you do the actual simulator?
I don't think. I wouldn't have let me do that either. You know, those things are like really expensive.
Yeah, it's probably like a couple hundred thousand
and
dollars.
And they build them for people too, so it's not they're just like making them, you know? So this was like someone's thing, and I got to sit in it, but they didn't let me. I don't know if they powered it on. I can't remember. They had like, they would take people up. It was an airfield too, so like they would take people up for flights during like open houses and stuff like that.
Oh, wow.
So,
wow.
I think I went up in a plane. I don't know.
So, yeah, I mean, before now, this is all coming together for me because before we started recording, you were talking about your family station wagon. And when you guys would go on family road trips or something, your dad had hooked up this whole like entertainment center in the back of the car equipped with a Nintendo.
Yeah, I think that was more my, like, you know, meddling in the situation, but, like, Dad was cool with it.
Yeah.
Like they, you know, like,
well, it sounds like if he's, like, building this kind of stuff and he's an electronic engineer or something like that, like, that's, like, right up his alley. He's like, I'm going to figure out how to make this work.
Yeah, he never really cared much if, like, we wanted to get down on stuff like that.
Yeah.
It was always kind of encouraged, and I always felt like I needed to do things like that.
Well, I got
to
tell you, man, that's pretty badass. Like, you had what, a Nintendo 64 in the back of your station wagon?
We had a Nintendo 64 in, I don't know if it was a station wagon or a van. We had a couple different little, like, road trip situations. Uh-huh. We used to go on road trips a lot growing up.
So now it's my turn. And you're going to learn a little bit about me, Danny.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Tell me more.
My parents had a station wagon as well. It was this old 1988 Crown Victoria station wagon. Had a V8 engine in it. So this thing is huge, right?
Yeah.
And it used to pull our boat.
Oh, cool.
And so we traveled around the western United States and around Canada pulling a big Bayliner boat.
Wow.
In a station wagon, a tan station wagon.
Is that like a fishing boat? That's not like a sailboat.
No, it was like a motorboat, sports boat, you know?
In a station wagon.
In a station
wagon,
dude.
Yeah. That's crazy.
It was huge. The thing was as big as a Suburban. It was just lower
like
to the
flat
ground.
Flat and wide.
Right. But it had those seats in the back where it would it would flip up.
Yeah, yeah. In the trunk?
Yeah.
Oh,
so there were two seats
in
the back in the trunk, and they would flip up. So you'd be sitting, you know, facing each other.
Mm-hmm.
And that would have been awesome. If we had some sort of television back there, that would have been really cool.
How old were you?
Let's see, 1988, I was 8 years old.
I mean, it would have taken a little bit of gumption at 8 years old, I suppose, but...
Yeah. Well, I don't even think
you
the
could have
Nintendo...
taken the initiative, you know, to do that. The first Nintendo was probably floating around.
When did the first Nintendo come out? I can't even remember. I remember when it came out.
I was
all
probably
my friends
like
had it.
7 or something. I don't know. It was probably 88.
Maybe 88?
I don't know. Something
maybe
like
89?
That. I remember like when we got one, Dad bought it for us.
Yeah, yeah.
But... And it was early on, but I can't remember how old I was.
I can't either. I just remember all my friends had one, and that kind of sucked.
My friends didn't have one.
Oh, really? You were that kid.
Dad was like a computer guy, so he was like,
oh,
we should pick this up.
Yeah.
This
so
is
I'm
cool.
guessing you guys probably had all of them, too, like the Atari. You probably had
We
the,
did have an Atari.
Texas Instruments.
I don't know. Yeah, I don't. I mean, I do remember playing Atari. I also remember, like, he would always get these things, but he never played them, really. He thought they were cool, but I don't think he was really into them as much. But then, you know, we were, like, way too into them. Like, my brother was really into them.
Yeah, yeah.
But, I don't know, I don't think that stuff's good for kids.
Yeah, I don't either. I'm still highly obsessed with them.
Like,
But
that's your sign, right? That's like, oh, wait, I probably shouldn't sit my kids down in front of these things.
Exactly. Yeah, that's the tell.
Yeah.
Right there, man. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So you said you got into music in the early 90s.
Yeah.
When everybody else our age got into music.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I was 10 or so. I got my first guitar at 10.
Uh-huh.
Started playing guitar,
what year
taking
we talking?
Lessons.
What was
it was probably 1993.
Okay.
I think. Yeah.
Yeah. That's actually 93. That's probably the same year I got my guitar.
What'd you get? So,
it was an acoustic. It's actually in the house, in the main house.
Oh.
I'll show it to you.
In the front room? I think
yeah,
I saw it.
Yeah.
Cool.
That Blue Ridge. Mm-hmm. That was my first guitar.
Cool.
And, yeah, just an awesome, awesome instrument, man.
And you still got it?
I still got it. Yeah, I can't get... Well, you see man. I, like, can't get rid of any
bunch
of them.
Of guitars. I think I started practicing or taking lessons on an acoustic.
Uh-huh.
But it was my dad's brother's, like, nylon string.
Yeah.
And it did me well, you know, but I got electric pretty quickly because I didn't really want to play acoustic guitar.
Yeah, yeah.
It's a big thing to, like, hang on to, too, when you're, like, a kid.
Oh, sure.
Like a giant guitar.
Yeah, it's hard to get your arm around it and everything.
Yeah.
Yeah, totally. So what was it that that made you want to play, though? Friends playing?
Well, it was, I had a buddy, yeah, my buddy got really, really heavy into Nirvana post when he was really heavy into Michael Jackson. So,
okay.
Like, he transitioned, I guess he was just getting into music and something, I don't know, but he was really into Michael Jackson. He did this, like, really cool talent show performance where he, like, took his hat off and, like, threw it in the crowd.
Yeah.
And it was, like, this solo kind of show for, like, our talent show, and I was
sure.
Like, whoa, this guy is fucking cool. I gotta hang out with this guy.
I gotta be friends with that guy.
I was really stoked. Yeah, and so he started playing guitar, and I was like, all right, well, I should start playing guitar, and we could start playing these Nirvana songs. That's all he wanted to do was play Nirvana songs.
Mm-hmm.
So he was learning Nirvana songs, and we would learn Nirvana songs. And the stupid thing was that it was two guitar players because nobody wanted to play bass. And
right.
So, and then we had these like revolving drummers. So like my buddy would sing and play guitar, and I would play like a rhythm guitar, which is kind of just the same guitar as his guitar, because there's only one guitar part for a lot of these songs. And then we had a few different people that played drums throughout the year or two that we did this, maybe, you know?
Yeah.
But we played shows and stuff to like, we played like an
at
auditorium
like,
once.
At
like
10, 11?
Yeah.
Really?
We played this bar that was really cool. I got like this video of it that I found at my parents' house like not too long ago.
No shit.
Yeah.
Oh my God. So how old were you when you played your first bar?
I was probably 11 or 10. We were billed as the 10-year-old Nirvana cover band.
You're kidding me.
No.
How did they even let a 10-year-old play in a bar?
They were just cool, I guess. I don't know, man. Midwest rules? I don't know how they do it.
Oh, my God. That's amazing.
Yeah, they didn't care. I mean, like, my friend's mom was the one running the show at the radio station. So, like, I think it was an event they were having.
Okay.
And
okay.
So, I don't know. I think they were just like, whatever, you know.
Yeah. So
and
you then, were pretty, I mean, you were pretty, like, surrounded by music at all times, too. Was your
at
mom
that
a
time,
DJ?
Yeah. No, I mean, my parents were, like, I think, like a lot of other people's kind of parents from their generation, just like how we're kind of our generation.
Yeah.
But, like, so they were into music, and, you know, they did, my dad was a drummer, but
oh,
he kind of
cool.
didn't do that anymore by the
right,
time, like, we
right.
were growing up. Like, I remember.
Do you still
after,
have a set, though?
He didn't know. Like he bought me a kit that was like a buddy's kit that was trying to get rid of it. His dad wanted to play baseball, so he like made himself his drum kit.
Oh,
and so like my dad and I showed up
sucks.
And bought the drum kit, and I was like, "Wow, this is awesome!" Like, and then I felt really guilty that my friend's dad, he was a huge dick.
Yeah,
like didn't
that's a huge dick.
He
move.
Was he was discussing where they were gonna place the baseball, like the t-ball, like. I don't know. I don't play sports. Like where you like you practice your pitch or whatever.
Yeah, sure.
He's like, we'll put it over there and we'll do this and that. And I'm just sitting there like, this sucks because like he looked so bummed out and like we were taking the drum set away.
Oh God.
To make room for him to like you know be
have
tortured
to
by
have
his dad.
To do this thing.
Yeah. So that was kind of funny, but
oh,
I got a drum
man.
Kit out of it.
Yeah.
It was
yeah.
pretty sweet. And I heard my dad play after that. I don't know if I'd ever heard him really play drums before that, but.
Was it like an eye-opening experience?
No,
was
it was
he
like,
able to still keep a beat and
cool? You know, not to like shit on dad or anything, but like he, you know, it was kind of old man style.
Hey, look,
you know, like
Father's Day,
it's over.
Is over. You can shit on him all you want now.
He's a cool guy. He's going to be here soon too, so I don't want to like you know ruin dinner or something one night. But He kind of did like a jazzy kind of thing where he'd hold the stick differently, you know, and
uh-huh.
I was always, cause I was a stupid kid. So I was like, no, man, you gotta like,
yeah,
play like
Dave
Grohl, man. Yeah. And he was just like, he didn't care. He was having fun. So, you know,
yeah,
God bless him.
Yeah. But what kind of, I think you were about to say this before I cut you off, but, you were going to talk about the music that was going on in the house.
At my house?
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
Growing up?
Yeah.
I mean, to be honest, there wasn't much of it. Like, my mom listened to a lot of soundtracks and stuff. Like, my dad...
Sounds about right.
They had a record collection, but it was just, like, you know, on a shelf somewhere. I never really saw it until I got older, and I, like...
Nat King Cole was probably in there.
It was probably some of that in there.
Some, like, my mom's. Nat King Cole, Michael Bolton.
Oh, yeah. My mom was definitely into Bolton.
A lot of moms were into Bolton.
But that's not when they were young. You know, like, I want to...
Oh, sure.
I'd rather know more about, like, what... And I saw some of that. Like, my dad was into, like, Alice Cooper and stuff like that.
That's what I always wanted my dad to have.
Yeah.
Right? Because all these other dads in my hometown, like, all had kept and held on to, like, these amazing record collections. And meanwhile, my dad had gotten
rid
of all
of them. Steppenwolf and the Doors. Like, my dad was into that kind of stuff. Yeah, I mean, it's kind of... Yeah, I think it's what a lot of people were into, especially at the time.
Oh, sure.
But...
Yeah. Well, it was pop music back in the 60s.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which is cool. I mean, it's what a lot of, like, modern culture is kind of based on. But
sure. Did you find anything? Did you ever, like, go through those
more
old
recently
records?
Yeah, really? I mean, the coolest thing I found, and I learned about this more recently, and I already kind of had just known because I saw my dad's copy of Alice Cooper's School's Out, where you open the desk and there's, like, a pair of panties on the disc.
Oh, really?
And that's pretty cool, you know? Like...
That's awesome.
Yeah, and, like, mom, of course, was all, like, rolling her eyes, and I'm like, come on, you guys are too old to be embarrassed by something like that.
It's right, just, right.
It's just something people do, you know? It's cool, it's funny, it's no big deal.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, that's pretty cool. I didn't know that that was... That
yeah,
that
it's much like the Rolling Stones cover where the tongue sticks out of the pants, like, when you pull, like, there's a zipper. And
right,
like,
Yeah.
It's like provocative album covers. I don't know. I bet like Warner Bros. Was spending like billions of dollars on album art at one point.
It sounds like it. When you start doing pop-up stuff, man.
Oh, Sub Pop did that more recently.
What did Sub Pop
do? I work in their warehouse. They do... so we were shipping these Father John Misty records that had a pop-up book and a... they had like a music box. Like
Opened
it up, pop-up book, music box.
No shit.
Yeah.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Pretty cool idea, right?
Yeah. Yeah, that's a very cool idea.
I don't think you can take, I don't know, once you, I don't know, that's pretty extreme though, right? For album artwork?
Yeah. I mean, it seems like that would cost a lot of money.
Probably.
There's a lot of overhead with that, with something like that.
Yeah.
I think you should think about it.
Yeah. Well, that would be like, okay, here's the overhead. We can't do that.
Right.
That'd be that's as far as I would get. I mean, I could price it all out, but it would probably be like, too, you know. It happens a lot.
So when did music start getting serious for you, man? I mean, obviously it was something that you really enjoyed.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it kind of like earlier in life, it had like its time and its place. And then I kind of got away from it. I don't really know what I did, you know, for a long time. Like middle school, I feel like that's got to be like the worst
it's all a haze.
Time in people's lives. And then like high school was kind of like, I just wasn't into it. I was just doing whatever high school kids were doing, I guess. But I would still play guitar. I had a guitar. I never got rid of my guitar. I'm actually currently rebuilding my guitar that I got when I was 10 to just kind of, you know.
The electric one?
Yeah, get it to work again.
What'd
it's kind
you
of
get?
Sad.
What kind of guitar?
It was a
it?
Squire. It was a Korean Squire.
Sure, sure.
Stratocaster.
Uh-huh.
But it was a good guitar. I don't know. It lasted me.
That was my first, that black Strat. That was my
there you go.
Strat. That's a Mexican one.
Oh, okay.
Plays like shit. I took it apart time, and took the pickups out and stuff like that. And basically, the pickups are just two strips of like oddly cut magnet that's hot glued.
Oh,
onto
I saw
the back
one.
Of...
I saw some of that on mine that I took apart.
Yeah, man,
the other ones were
looking.
Missing. I don't know what happened to them. Like one of them had it on there. It was like cracked in half.
Uh huh.
And it was just sitting there.
Yeah, that sounds about
right. I don't know what that's.
Just a really cheap
way to
make.
I don't know
about
building pickups, you know.
Pickups,
but.
Man. Yeah, it doesn't seem like that's the right way to do it.
Yeah.
Well, that's cool, man. So, yeah, for me, well, I mean, high school was the, like, junior high was the badass years. Those
like
were the
when
fun
you were
years.
Having the most. Like, what do you mean? I
it
mean,
was
I had
fun,
fun
that was
then.
Fun,
I
man.
Was like skateboarding, and I tried pot once, and.
Yeah,
you know what I mean? Like, I don't know. That was fun.
Sure.
You had,
high
like,
school
a license
for me
to be
not,
an idiot.
It was not great.
Yeah, I
didn't
mean,
have a great experience in high school.
I don't know. High school sucks. High school through college was kind of stupid.
Really? You didn't enjoy college?
No, not at all. That's when I started playing music.
Oh, really?
Like, again. Yeah, I was like, this
sucks.
So
where did you go? Did you end up going to the college in your town?
No. I would never have gotten in there, to be honest. That's a pretty good school. I went to, like, this small... it's kind of a bigger college. It's full of all these kids from Chicago who couldn't get into any other school. They were all kind of the fuck-ups that, like, couldn't get in anywhere.
Yeah.
And so they all went to Southern Illinois University.
Okay.
And so that's where I went for, like, one semester when I first graduated high school. I, like, needed to go to school, I thought, or something. So I went there.
Yeah.
And, you know, within, like, a few months, I was like, I don't really want to be hanging out here.
Were you doing well in your classes?
Yeah, actually, that was probably the best I ever did in college.
Really?
Because I didn't really want to do any of the other stuff. There was just all kinds of... The culture there was just bad.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I met some nice people and stuff, but it was just kind of like, I don't want to be here. So I transferred. I went back. I did go back home. Went to a community college for a second. The plan was to go to this other college in Bloomington. There's a lot of colleges around, apparently. So I went to this other college in Bloomington, and that was when I was just kind of like, I need to finish school. You know, I can't just keep doing this. Obviously, yeah. I just don't like this.
Yeah.
So I was like, I'll just
start. Did you have in mind what you wanted to do, though? Like,
no, I had no idea. I had
no
idea.
In the back of your mind?
No, I still don't have any idea. I mean, the idea of playing music was to kind of circumvent having to, like, do something else.
Sure.
And I'm still there. So I don't know. I don't know where this is going either.
But it's a good plan.
That's my plan. You know, it's like, you need a plan. I was like, all right, well, this is my plan. I'll do this.
I love it. But did you decide on a major? Did you
your
degree?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I have a degree in economics.
In economics?
Yeah. I checked that box.
That's what you did.
I checked that box. Yeah. I put my head down, and I finished. Barely. I got in trouble and stuff, too. And, like, I don't know. It was just like...
Like academic probation kind of trouble? Is that what
you're
talking
about?
Yeah,
I got in trouble with that once. And I also got caught smoking pot once. And like,
at college?
Yeah, right? It's, like, in the dorms, though. Like,
oh, okay.
It was so stupid, man.
That's
like,
making
like,
sense.
Yeah, I mean, I was, like, kind of too old. Like, they made you live in the dorms. This is, like, the rumor. So, like, there was all these... This is so stupid. There was a big teaching program at this school.
Uh-huh.
So, like, all these girls were there. So, like, they were trying to tell us that, like, you had to live in the dorms for, like, an extra long... Like, you had to stay there all the way through your junior year or something. Or, like, sophomore year. Yeah, they made you, like, stay in the dorms forever.
For security kind of thing?
Yeah, and, like, they had this, like, crazy security. They had, like, all-girls dorms because apparently, like, more girls went there because there was a teaching program, which just seems kind of stupid. But, I had to live in the fucking dorms for, like, after I'd already been living in, like, an apartment for a second. I went to a school, lived in the dorms, got in trouble and shit. And I was just like, this is the dumbest thing. Like, why? You know, this all can't be the point. You know, the point should be something else. But, like, I don't feel like I was ever at any point shown what the point of all of it was.
Were you making friends at that school, though? Like,
yeah,
were you having an okay time outside of class?
I mean, I had an okay time, but I didn't really see where it was all going.
You are depressing the shit out of me.
Well, that's when I started playing music, and then I started playing music back in my hometown, which is about an hour away.
Okay.
So, because there was still a music scene there, and I met a whole bunch of other friends over there.
Gotcha.
That I was playing music with at the time, and they all had bands. That was like my introduction to kind of like, basically like what I'm doing now. Like, they would play shows out. They'd like drive around to like other towns like Peoria and stuff like that and play shows. House shows, stuff like that.
Uh-huh.
And so I was like, okay, this is cool. I get this. You know, I want to make all this music. And I already kind of was. I was recording in Sony Acid, like a copy of Sony Acid I got off my dad. It was like a...
Oh, the recording software.
Yeah.
Like, I was like, wait a minute.
It was kind of like a primitive DAW.
Right. Exactly.
But it worked and it was cool.
Exactly.
You know, there's nothing like an 8-track mixer into a 1/8-inch sound card input. It was pretty cool.
Yeah. I mean, college was the first real experience that I ever had, like, recording myself.
Mm-hmm. Like multi-tracking?
Yeah, it was multi-track. Well, it wasn't multi-track, but it was, you know, it was a 4-track tape player that somebody had stolen from the music department because they didn't use it anymore. That was, like, when they were making the transition into digital.
Yeah.
And so it was just like, they were like, well, they're not using these anymore. We'll just, you know, some of the kids took them from the department and nobody asked any questions.
As they should have.
Yeah. And they were great, man. I think I actually still have it, too. It's an amazing little 4-track player.
Just cassette?
Yeah, just cassette. Yeah. But you can DI it into a into something like this over here and transfer all the tracks and everything like that. So it's pretty
you can probably mix
handy.
Yeah,
you can mix on it too. Yeah, it's pretty cool, man. And that was my first experience with that. And I remember it just like exploding my mind because I was like, I've got all these ideas.
You just get really
that
excited.
I've never been able to really do anything with. Yeah, and then you just, you're layering and layering and layering and compressing and then layering and layering and layering again, man. It was so much fun.
I mean,
so
I wish I had started this journey sooner. I don't know if everyone feels that way about their lives, but...
Oh, yeah.
You know, I don't know. It makes sense that you'd have to do the things first that led you there, but I don't know. I don't know if I'd have gone to school for something like that, you know, if I'd have had the dream sooner. I think I would have just bypassed all of that and just kind of went forward doing it myself.
I majored in geology in school and I like my job and I like where I'm at. I'm a geologist.
Oh, well, there you go. See, that makes sense.
It makes sense, right? But now, 5 years ago, I got into doing this thing.
Yeah.
And I'm like, why didn't I fucking major in communications? I didn't go into radio or something like that. This has become my love.
Like a lot of showbiz, you just kind of, if you could just go for it, it's kind of all the same.
Right.
There's not a lot of like professors of showbiz out there.
Yeah. But like you, I'm doing it on the side and trying to make it work.
Yeah.
Right. So we got a lot in common.
Yeah, we do. We should hang out sometime.
We should, man. I like you. Let's do this. Let's go with our second musical break. We're featuring tunes off of the new Grave Babies album, Holographic Violence. And I got to say, I really, really like it.
Thank you.
Yeah. I wasn't just lying when I said that I listened to it on my scooter.
Oh, yeah,
and
yeah.
And pretend that I'm in the movie The Lost Boys.
You probably shouldn't listen to things on your scooter, though, right? Do people do that?
Say anything.
I'm just worried about you.
I'm certain it's illegal. I'm absolutely certain it's illegal. That's why I hide my headphone. Like I put the headphone jack through my shirt.
Yeah.
You know? But I mean you listen to music in your car, right?
Yeah. Well, some people even wear headphones in the car.
Yeah,
which
that,
is also
that
illegal.
Actually kind of bugs me.
Yeah, I don't
but
think
it shouldn't
illegal.
Because I do it on my scooter.
Yeah.
So
it's a double standard.
That is for sure. The album comes out on July 24th, this Friday, right?
July 24th.
July 24th, yeah.
Oh, yeah, there you
Remember,
go.
Remember, we're doing this in the past.
You just gave it away.
Yeah, why not? Tear down the fourth wall.
Yeah.
It's June right now, but when this... when this
no, I get it. This, I get
okay,
it now.
Okay. All right, the song is called Something Awful, and we'll be right back with more of the Air Raid Podcast for your ears. Stay with us.
Fall under the weight now. It's not calm. Just see.
where did you get, like, the influence to start making music like this that you're doing now?
This
had to come from somewhere.
Yeah. So it was mostly from doing a bunch of kind of DIY recording, like I'd been doing prior to, like, just this particular project. But I got really, 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 really into Roy Orbison, like, for a time. And I was kind of more or less just, like, struck by the vocals, and I was like, I could sing like that, maybe, you know, because it was just so foreign to me to try and do something like that. And then it was almost like an experimental recording project to sing like that and then add my own harmonies to my, you know, to, like, so basically just doing, like, three or four takes.
Yeah.
For every song.
I love that,
vocals.
Man, because that's what you know, I was really into Elliott Smith.
Yeah.
And that's what his vocals sound like, too. And so I would always double up my vocals on the recordings.
Well,
supposedly, I was
making. It's like a John Lennon kind of thing.
Oh, is it really?
Too. I think the Beatles are kind of credited a lot with, like, multi-tracking harmonies and stuff.
Yeah.
But, I mean, really, it just goes back to, like, that 60s, like, kind of wall
sure.
sound kind
yeah.
of production style.
Totally. But, so you're like, you have multiple tracks of yourself singing. That's how you get it to sound like that?
Yeah. Like, a lot of these new songs probably had, like, upwards of 12, 13 vocal tracks.
Holy shit,
sometimes
man.
On them. They were kind of doubled or, like, re-recorded. Or,
yeah.
Like, I had a bunch of tracks that I had done. I worked on the record for about a year or so before.
And you did this pretty much all by yourself, right? Except for the mixing and...
I did most of the production by myself for about a year until we started... I started working with Bryce, who's the bass player. Uh-huh. And then he started kind of learning... We were already kind of working on bass parts. He was in the band at that point. But he started to kind of write his own bass parts. He was, like, charged with that. You know, it's like, okay, let's open this up. Let's maybe figure out how we're going to track a lot of the other stuff in this. Because I wanted to retrack the guitars. A lot of it was just kind of scratched out at that point.
Yeah.
But all
yeah.
the, like, synth and drum production was relatively the same.
Okay.
From like, when I had kind of finished it to the end of the record. It just got kind of mixed and, you know, kind of affected in that way.
Yeah, yeah.
But where was I going with this?
We were talking about vocal tracks, vocal tracking, and your love of Roy Orbison and how that influenced this style of music that you started playing.
Yeah. So I don't know. I just I recorded the record and then
you should have seen the look on your face. Like, okay, yeah, I'll just go from here.
Yeah, that was kind of it, you know. We started working.
Well, it's very. I mean, this is a very distinct sound that you have on this record, right?
Yeah.
I mean, it's very. I want to say Bauhausian.
It's dark.
It's dark, man.
It's dark. I mean, it was so the music too. So like that's a lot of what Grave Babies is. I think is that vocal. So a lot of this record though was I fell really hard for The Cure's Disintegration.
Yeah.
And I started, like, getting really, really wrapped up in that when I was, like, we didn't tour much for the last full length, and so as things kind of started to wind down a little bit and I wasn't sure what to do next, I started writing these new songs, and I was being inspired by that album a lot.
Yeah.
Like, a lot. And so that was only kind of, like, the first, you know, half of the record, though, too. The record's relatively, it's in chronological order. From when they were all written too, so you can kind of see different parts in different songs that kind of sound similar from song to song, but then it progresses too, you know.
Well, and that's what I was actually going to lead into that a little bit because I did want to ask you if this was some kind of concept album.
No, but everything I feel like I do, I try and create that effect.
Really?
I think. Yeah, like,
you're telling a story. Almost by
chapter.
Yeah,
like I wanted to feel that way. Like it kind of came down to when we were doing the track ordering and stuff, and I really wanted to keep it as it had been presented so far throughout the entire thing. Like when Bryce started working on stuff and he got kind of a scratch copy of the record, it had always been in this chronological order.
Right.
And like I had always kind of imagined the first song that I wrote would be like the single or the lead song or whatever. And the same thing happened with the last album too. And even like, I don't know, I feel like every time it's the first song that I write that becomes the first song on the record, and it's kind of like the first song I want to show to everybody.
Yeah.
Like it
yeah.
wraps up the rest of it in some way.
Sure.
Because it was the first one and it kind of inspires the rest of them.
Uh-huh.
But, yeah.
So, I mean, what was your headspace when you were working on this? Because it was, like we said, it's a very dark record. And I mean, to what you're singing about on some of it, although I did tell you that I don't pay it a whole lot of attention to lyrics.
Mm-hmm.
I just don't have the brain capacity for it for some reason. Like, I can't. I've never been able to, like, memorize lyrics.
A lot of lyrics are really shitty, too.
Well, yeah. And that's probably why I never could write any good lyrics.
You heard a few lyrics and you were like, eh, I've had enough of this.
Hey, baby.
Yeah.
You know, that was basically all of my songs.
That's really deep, though.
Yeah, yeah. Well, it got very sad later on. Yeah. I'm going to cut that part out. it's a darker album. I mean, were you going through some shit when you were writing this thing?
Man, I'm always going through some shit, you know? No, I mean, that kind of is like my headspace. I do always feel a really high level of kind of anxiety and like, I feel like I'm always needing to do something that I'm not doing or that, you know, something has to get done and I haven't quite gotten there yet. Or
yeah.
I have like stress dreams like that too and stuff. But, that's just kind of where I start most of the time.
You start
that's kind
from
of what
a
motivates
from a
me.
Spot of anxiety.
Yeah, I feel like I need to be motivated by stuff like that.
I totally.
And
know
I think
that
that's
feeling.
The message. That's too. It's also like the message of a lot of the songs and stuff with the lyrics and things like that. It's like it's you know I feel as though everything's kind of dark and stuff, but I feel like the point is that is the point. It's like you need to just deal with that fact.
Okay.
And that's kind of what a lot of the lyrics are and stuff.
Yeah.
Where it's like I'm gonna like you know drag people through the mud. So that they understand that, like, when they're not in the mud, they, like, have an experience to, like, reflect on, you know?
Sure,
otherwise, you're just kind of not doing shit all the time.
I've been learning that.
Well, and I think we all do.
Well,
you know?
I know, but I'll tell you this, and this is going to fuck up the whole time continuum of this episode.
Yeah.
Because I'm going to be 35 on Friday.
Right? Ah, okay, yeah. Record comes out on Friday.
35 on Friday of June. When we're recording this,
okay, yeah,
the record comes out on Friday, July 24th.
That's
yeah,
true.
When this episode goes live, is everybody fully confused yet? No, but I'm gonna turn 35 here pretty soon, and I've always dealt with anxiety, and I've never dealt with it correctly, right? And I think I'm finally coming to this whole realization of what you were just talking about is like. Yeah, everything's fucked, man. And but you just gotta just kind of deal with it.
Yeah, I mean that's
it's always
kinda,
gonna be fucked.
Yeah, I think people like think that's what like growing up means, or that's what being an adult is.
Right.
You know, I think we're also poisoned with this idea like
that things can get better and
well,
and,
yeah,
or that things
in a
are
way.
Supposed to be better.
Yeah, like in the sense that we yeah. live like we're you know we're pretty coddled like our generation and you know
sure.
even like our parents and stuff. So, like, we have this very rosy outlook on life, of course. So we realize now later as we prolong our childhoods longer and longer and now, you know, like as our generation, like millennials even or whatever,
yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah.
But as we get older, we prolong our childhoods even longer. And it probably takes us even longer to figure that shit out. And we probably figure it out in ways that are, like, very subversive and stuff, you know, in ways that aren't very natural.
Yeah, yeah.
So I don't really know of any way to deal with it, you know, besides like what we're talking about. I think
I
that's
feel
it.
Like, I feel like,
I don't think we're
like,
built for this world. You know, I don't
yeah,
think,
yeah.
I think we've built this world. I don't think that we're fit for this world that we've built for ourselves.
No, I don't think
humans.
So either. I mean, this is a testament to me trying to hang on to my youth at somehow is like doing this show and having, you know, having, people younger than myself come in and talk to me about their music and stuff like that. Or lining up all these guitars from my past that are now, you know, these...
I saw some dust on one of them, man.
Yeah, there's some dust on them, man. I mean, shit, I got two kids, right? It's hard to get in here and rock out. But I still do from time to time. But, I mean, it's just like a shrine to my youth.
Yeah.
You know, this whole room is a shrine to my youth. I've got my video games over there, along with my Star Wars... you know, movies and everything like that. I can't get over it, but I think
we do that. People do that. And I don't think it's a bad thing.
I don't think it's a bad thing either. But it does like, you fill your life. I guess where I'm going with this is, like, I've been filling my life with all this stuff.
Yeah.
That I feel like is going to make me feel better somehow and get rid of the anxiety of having to live the day-to-day and go to the 9-to-5 and then come back and do what I really love.
Kind of like a bizarre duality to your life. Yeah,
yeah, exactly. And like and so I.
But
I
why
think
do we
I'm
compartmentalize
like,
things like that? You know, I mean, I don't that, know. That I could don't just know be our can't. Human trait. I think we. Well, yeah, yeah. I mean, maybe we can't. Well, maybe that's just the world that's been presented to us. We didn't. I don't think we built this world. We prolong it.
Right.
But you know, maybe this is just the way it's been taught to us, and it's no longer applicable.
Well, that's what I'm saying. It has been taught to us. This is what is taught to you as the American dream.
Yeah.
Right. That's the whole point.
Well,
of it.
That. Yeah. Yeah. But, I mean, you're thus then teaching things to your children that are, you know, you're just better, you know, more or less,
sure.
like, just what the best you can do,
yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
And that's all, like, our families have done for us and sure. before them and everything.
Yeah, and that's where the real struggle begins. Because then you really start wrestling with it. And that's something that I'm going through right now, too, with my children,
mm-hmm.
is like, okay. You know, you gotta, like, I have been taking stock of all this stuff. Like, we've got this studio back here, which is awesome, by the way.
This is a very nice studio.
Love this place. And, you know, I've put up all this stuff, you know, so I can admire it. I don't care if anybody else admires it, but I love it, right?
Yeah.
That's my thing.
This is
but
your
I'm also
space.
At the same time trying to teach my daughter that she doesn't need all this stuff.
Oh,
but then
yeah.
she comes back into daddy's studio and it's like, well, you got all this
It's
shit.
Just a monument to crap that you like.
All I wanted was a $5 Barbie. You've got a $2,000 bass hanging from the wall.
Well, maybe that was exactly what happened to you when you were younger.
I don't know.
I think parents always try and teach restraint. You know, it's a good
yeah,
lesson. But
yeah.
it's, and I mean, realistically, like how else... She's not going to get the Barbie any other way than asking you for the Barbie, you know? She's not going to go out and get a job and buy it or anything.
She could.
But that's the
she
that's,
could
that's
if she
the
wasn't
lesson,
so fucking
right?
lazy.
Yeah, right? The lesson is that, like, oh, go get a job and you get your own Barbie or whatever.
Right, right.
That's the lesson. Mm-hmm. And you went and got a job. You're a geologist, and now you have this wonderful little studio. You earned it, man.
You're making me feel better.
You earned it. But what have you earned? That was kind of what you were. That's kind of where you were going with that.
Right.
Like,
what
well,
have
what
I
is
earned?
This?
More stress, more anxiety,
just
or,
more to
or
keep
just
up with
the same. This it's the same shit. Like nothing changes.
Yeah.
You know, even I'm
well,
sure
yeah.
that people who are you know billionaires, nothing's changed for them.
They're probably really stressed out.
Totally stressed out.
Yeah,
still
I don't know. I
kind of
want to move to the woods. You know, I kind of want to move to the woods or do something like that eventually. Just kind of get the fuck out of here. This is, like, so stupid. Like, I mean, the rat race is what it is. I think everything kind of is what it is.
Right.
But, like, if you find something that maybe you want to do, you should probably just go fucking do that. Because, like, you're not going to ever, like, bend anything to your will, you know?
Sure, sure. I had this thought before you got here today. I was standing in the kitchen, right? And it, constantly, I daydream constantly, right?
Mm-hmm.
My mind will just go elsewhere for a moment. And like I said, I just quit smoking, too, so I've been under a lot of
You're
stress
freaking out,
with that kind of shit. But I was just standing there in the kitchen, and I was looking out across to our neighbor's house across the street, and I was just like, you know, what happens when, you know, all the ice – if in my lifetime all the polar ice caps melt, how high is that watermark going to be? Right?
Mm-hmm.
We're kind of on top of a hill here.
Mm-hmm.
Is that water going to be at my front doorstep, you know? How if it comes out that's like, okay, everybody agrees that this shit is happening, like we're going to end up in some sort of like, you know, Cormac McCarthy, like the road,
mm-hmm.
you know, situation. Like what do you do then? Do you just say, okay, well... Let's just move back to your hometown. We'll stay in a tent for a little bit and then just let it happen.
I don't think that... because what happens after that, though?
You die.
Yeah, I mean, you're going to die either way. I do think it's possible. I mean, I don't know,
but
man.
You live out... But you at least you live out the rest of it, not worrying
all
about all the other shit.
Like this whole modern world? Well, yeah. Yeah, I mean, ideally, I don't think that we're built for like these stresses and these worries and stuff. I don't think like our frail human bodies are built for it, which is like where the
no.
anxiety comes from. I
sure.
think that we're constantly just kind of like piling things on top of ourselves because our minds and our imaginations think that we can do it, right?
Right.
That's kind of
right.
like what drives us.
Yeah.
But at a certain point, I think we need to just question, like, what, you know, what we're doing and, like,
what's
why.
It for?
Yeah, there is no real right. purpose, like, involved, you know? There's
yeah.
no real, like, there's no goal. There's no, like, stated goal about humanity.
Yeah.
So, like, I don't really know where we expect we're going.
Yeah.
Because we seem to think that we're never there, you know? But it's like, well, where the fuck do you think we're going? Because you never really, no one ever really made that claim.
Yeah. And I would venture to guess that nobody actually ever really attains their goal either.
No.
There's always something that can be done that's...
Well, yeah. Then we're assuming that it's flawed from the beginning, you know,
right.
that the quest is kind of, like, negative. But I think, personally, if we're just animals, which it seems like we are, then we see other animals and we see that they should be doing something else, you know, that they shouldn't be kept in cages or whatever, and we should try and apply some of those things to ourselves, because I don't see why we are any different if we're just animals, you know? Like,
right.
what do we
right.
need as animals, you know? Like, chickens shouldn't be in coops. People shouldn't be sitting in a fucking house, maybe. You know? Maybe. I don't know. But, like, no one's really ever asked the question, you know? It's like, what's a free-range human?
Right.
What is that?
Right.
Because I bet there's, like, a scientific answer. Like, we're pretty smart, you know? Like, we could easily apply the same standards we apply to other things
yeah.
to ourselves.
Oh, my God.
And I think
That's
we'd be better
point.
Off. We'd be much better off from it. But I don't think that we would ever do it because you'd be like, oh, wait, I have another idea. And then it's like, ah, fuck. We're, like, right back where we started, you know?
Sure,
where it's
sure.
like, nah, you wanted to build a bed. You know, and it's made out of like
you
all
really,
this stuff, and
yeah.
you have to go manufacture it somewhere. And now we're just like kind of
you
right
really
back.
Wanted
where
that
started.
Space foam.
Yeah,
mattress.
I wanted a pizza in 10 minutes or less. You know that I can track on my iPhone.
Exactly, which is kind of cool.
You can't exactly explain what's wrong with that, right? But
no,
you would assume something's wrong with that. You could, you know, you could assume something's bad about it.
That's true. So but basically, this is where your headspace was at.
This is where I'm
writing.
At all the time.
This
yeah, like, I'm constantly wrestling with these things. Like back to going to college, like I took a bunch of philosophy. I should have been a philosophy major, but I didn't see a future in that. Right. So like, I don't
so
know what
economics.
Yeah, I don't know what the future in that is either. But and then I chose music. Right. So I kind of met somewhere in between.
Yeah. Yeah.
But.
Are you happy, though? Like, are you happy with where you're at? Besides all the anxiety, besides all the stress. And
there's moments of joy in my life.
Moments of joy.
Like us all, right? Isn't that a fair assumption?
I don't think that anyone's
just like, well, there are people that are just fucking stoked all the time. And those are probably the people that are causing all the problems, to be honest.
I think most people that act like everything is peachy, like constantly, first of all, they're full of shit.
Well, they don't understand themselves. They don't understand humanity.
I think that's totally right. I think that's totally right. They may not. They may not be full of shit, but they may not just understand their.
I think that, however, is the goal. That was the unstated goal of industrialization and capitalism.
What, just being peachy at all times,
becoming someone who is completely blissful. And like, ignorance is bliss, right?
Right.
So we're not ignorant, but we're blissful. It's like, maybe you're ignorant then. Right? We all think that
oh,
way.
Yeah.
We're all like,
yeah.
we just want to be happy.
Totally.
It's like, well, that means you want to be stupid, actually.
I like you a lot. I really do. You are my equal.
Oh, thanks. That's cool.
Oh, my God. So, I think we fucking did it, man. I think.
Yeah.
I think
I
that's
mean,
it.
We did it.
We did it.
We did something.
Congratulations, Danny.
Thanks, man.
That was good shit right there, man.
Thank you.
Let's plug your wares a little bit.
What
and,
do we got? We got records
you know,
for sale. We
yeah.
got.
Yeah. Where can we find the record? Where can we see you play live?
The new record's coming out. It'll be fine. You can find it on hardlyart.com.
Yeah.
There's like a shop page for the record.
And you guys don't have, like, a full-on website, right?
We don't, no. I mean, you can go to our Facebook page, and there's, like, a shop thing
okay.
and, like, a tour page and stuff, and we're on Instagram.
Okay. We'll link to that stuff on,
yeah.
on our show blog.
But
so
records should be in record stores near you.
Yeah. Coming Friday.
Friday.
That's right.
It's going to be a big day. We're playing Capitol Hill Block Party that night.
Oh, yeah.
And we're playing an in-store at Everyday Music early in the day.
That's awesome. I'm gonna come and try to see you guys at Block Party.
Cool, yeah.
I usually try to stay away from Block Party, but man, there are some really fucking good acts.
Who else is playing that Friday night?
I don't know who's playing the Friday.
There's a few other Hardly Art bands, too.
But I know that, let's see, Chastity Belt is playing, aren't they? They're playing sometime at Black Party.
I know that, Protomartyr's playing. I'm just talking Hardly Art bands. Protomartyr's playing, right. And so is Shannon the Clams.
Shannon the Clams are going to be there?
If Chastity Belt's playing, I'm not sure if they are. Maybe they're playing the Vera stage, but I'm not sure.
I think they're playing.
There's a lot of bands playing the festival.
Yeah, it's a big. That's a.
This
big
is going to be a big
year.
Weekend.
It is. Wink, wink. Yeah, totally. Fourth wall. All right, Danny. Thank you so much for coming and
yeah, thanks for having
me,
man.
This has been a lot of fun.
Nice to meet you.
Yeah, nice to meet you too. I'm not just saying that.
I just said it.
Whoa! That conversation went to a place, man. That was so much fun. Oh my God! Once again, Grave Baby's new album, Holographic Violence, comes out July 24th. Get your hands on a copy. The whole thing is amazing. It's amazing how many times the movie Lost Boys has been coming up in conversation in this here podcast in the recent years. What a great movie, right? What a great movie. Yeah, just strolling along on my scooter, listening to Grave Babies, feeling like I'm in the Lost Boys movie, man. Love it. Love it. Go get your hands on a copy. Go to hardlyart.com/gravebabies and get it July 24th, people. It is totally worth it. One thing I forgot to say about Timberfest, there was a secret show on Friday with Air Raid alumni, Planes on Paper, and I actually, wasn't supposed to, like, intro them or anything like that, but I had this idea, and Chad of Artist Home was there, and he was like, that is a great idea, and I got up on stage, and I recited Mikey's speech from The Goonies. Because it was just a really small crowd, maybe like 50 people, or maybe even less than that, maybe 40 or something like that, for all these VIP people that spent a lot of money, and really helped them out, and they played this amazing show, and I did this speech from Goonies, and it went awesome, and then Planes on Paper played, and I just proceeded to cry my eyes out, man. It was such an emotional experience. It was so amazing. So go to their page too and get a copy of their EP because it is phenomenal. And seeing them live, man, whoa, that's a whole nother experience. You can subscribe to the Air Raid podcast on iTunes. And if you do, please take a moment to rate the show. Only takes a couple seconds to give us a little star rating on iTunes and, really helps out in the long run. We're also available on the Stitcher, TuneIn, Cairo Radio, and now the Spreaker apps. So go do that, or just visit air-raid.net to subscribe directly to our RSS feed. Get it each week on your podcatching devices. Keep in touch by liking our Facebook page at facebook.com/theairraidpodcast. Our Twitter handle is @airraidnet, or email me directly, aaron@air-raid.net. And remember to take the pledge, folks. Take the pledge to tell somebody about this show. Bring it up in conversation. If you like the show, we want you to talk about it. That's the best way we can get the word out about this thing, right? Tell your friends, your mother, your sister, your brother. We'll even take your fathers. Yeah, we'll take your fathers. Sign them up when they're not looking. Right? That always works. They'll love it. They'll absolutely love it. Here's your inspirational quote of the week, as said by a 3.5-year-old. Or no, she's 4 now. She's 4.
A strong, positive self-image is the best possible preparation for success.
Oh, that was a tricky one.
That was a tricky one, huh?
All right. Thank you so much for listening this week, everybody. We really appreciate it. Thanks to everybody at Timber that we met this week. And to everyone who I missed on that thank you at Timber who put that thing on, from the security people down to the catering, down to the artists, to everybody that puts that on, especially Kevin Sir, Chad Cliburn, Phil Phil, what's his last name? Phil, what's your last name? O'Sullivan? Was that it? I think that might be it. Thank you guys. Artist Home, you guys are awesome, and it was such a great experience. This song that we're going to go out to with today is Positive Aggression by the band Grave Babies, and we'll be back next week with a full new episode of the Air Raid Podcast for your ears. Have a great week, everybody.
Take me home, this is all.